the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
For the past 2 years, the Jacksonville Jaguars have had the same record, but with greatly different results. In 2022, the Jags won 6 of their final 7 games to finish 9-8, winning the AFC South en route to a playoff game victory. Last year, the Jaguars lost 5 of their final 6 games to finish 9-8, missing out on the playoffs completely. The defense took the brunt of the blame, as defensive coordinator Mike Caldwell was fired, and much of the defense was not retained. Will the Jaguars choose to reload on defense in the NFL draft? Or will an offensive player be on the menu with the 17th overall draft pick? To help break down all the Jags' draft needs and more, I welcome back Demetrius Harvey of the Florida Times-Union in Jacksonville. He'll be here in just a moment to share his expertise. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and thank you once again for joining me on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. We were recently named the number one sports podcast in the state by Feedspot.com. Thanks to Feedspot for that honor. As always, this podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper, and of course, this podcast, to help support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. The NFL draft is almost here, and it's time to hear what to expect out of the Jacksonville Jaguars with Demetrius Harvey. Demetrius, welcome back to the podcast.
It's great to be back.
Certainly. Good to hear your voice. As I mentioned in the intro, the past 2 years have yielded the same record, but much different results for the Jaguars. For their efforts, they get the number 17 pick in this year's draft to start out. So you've been putting out mock drafts for the past few weeks. What do you expect to see with that number 17 pick?
Yeah, I've actually gone a few different directions, and it's kind of on purpose. The first go around, I went wide receiver. I went with Brian Thomas out of LSU, and I just think that he offers so much speed, so much versatility, a guy who can kind of play that Calvin Ridley role for the Jaguars. Since they lost Calvin, they're going to need somebody else to sort of fill that niche for Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, they've already brought in Gabe Davis, and he's a guy that I thought, you know, can always obviously offer some downfield threat, but bringing in a guy like Brian Thomas made sense. And then I went ahead and looked at the trenches. You know, Trent Baalke came in and said that, you know, building up the trenches, getting bigger and stronger is one of the most important aspects of this team. That's something that's going to be vital for them moving forward, especially with how they finished the season. They weren't able to run the ball, and they weren't able to stop the run late. And, you know, so building in the trenches is going to be massively important. I went with the offensive lineman in the second time. You know, I went with Fontenot. I'm so sorry for butchering his name.
That's all right. It's Fautanu, and I know that because Joe Shad of the Palm Beach Post also mentioned him for the Miami Dolphins, and he has great pronunciation. Fautanu.
Fautanu. There you go. And so, you know, there's a variety of ways that they can address that position. The offensive tackle is interesting because, you know, Cam Robinson and Walker Little, those are guys who are entering the last year of their deals. You know, Cam Robinson obviously signed that 3-year contract extension a couple years ago, and then Walker Little was drafted in the 2021 NFL draft, but neither player seemed to have a long-term future on this team. So when you go about and you look at it, they have Antoine Harrison at right tackle, and then they have Cam Robinson slash Walker Little at left tackle, but beyond this year, they have nothing. So, you know, going into this draft, you know, usually you want to take players that are going to project to be starters later down the line. These are going to be guys that you're going to rely on for the next 10 years, potentially, or at least that's what you would hope. And so going offensive tackle at that spot, I feel like although they won't necessarily start this year, although you could put him or even Funaga, and he's another guy that I think I took a look at, you can put both of those guys in there at guard and then sort of project them outside. And now after that, I went with defensive end, you know, Jared Verse out of FSU, he's a guy that I feel like would be strong in this defense. You know, with Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, they don't have necessarily anything behind him. Caleb Von Chason has walked in free agency. He's now with the Panthers. He didn't really show anything too much the first 4 years. He was with the Jaguars anyway. And so bringing in a third pass rusher makes sense. But for this week, and I haven't released it yet, but I have a pretty strong feeling of which direction I'm going to go, which is probably going to be Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, the cornerback. And I just feel like that team or this team needs some help at that position. They went out and they signed Ronald Darby, but you know, they also had to get rid of Darius Williams. Ronald Darby is a guy who is a journeyman at this point in his career. He's injury prone. He is liable to miss some time. And behind Tyson Campbell, the Jaguars don't really have much depth because it's all young. Monteric Brown has had some experience, but other than that, there's really nothing there. So going cornerback, I feel like it makes the most sense. Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, being able to become a starter in that Alabama defense coached by Nick Saban, or was coached by Nick Saban. You know, that's something hard to do. And I feel like, you know, when you have a guy with that skill set, that amount of talent, it's hard to pass him up. So yeah, so that's sort of where I got, or what I have going for me in terms of that 17th pick. And I'm excited and sort of looking forward to seeing what they're going to do.
All right, well, there you go. If you listen to this podcast, you are getting embargoed information that's not going to be released until closer to the draft. So thank you for that nugget, Demetrius. It gives the people a little Easter egg here to know what's coming in your reporting. Now, the funny thing is about all of the names you said, so you're coming out with your fourth draft pick or your fourth mock draft, and you've chosen four different players each time, yet you're the expert. The fans pick someone totally different. So we put out a vote to fans with 10 prospects that the Jaguars could take with that number 17 pick. And none of the four players you just mentioned were top of that list. So mention one more player, the guy who actually did win that fan vote.
Yeah, Adonai Mitchell out of Texas. And you know what's funny is that he's a guy that I, early in this process of sort of trying to figure out who the top players are, because I don't go deep into the draft. I don't have time. You know, I don't know how these people do 300 player big boards when they've only started watching in January, but I digress. Adonai Mitchell was a guy that I thought of immediately. I talked to him at the combine. Very confident player is what I would say about him, but you know, it kind of shows up on the field. And last year for Texas, when after he transferred from Georgia, he had 845 yards, 11 touchdowns. I mean, the guy was productive, and it was playing in an offense that, you know, was kind of held back by its quarterback position. Quinn Ewers couldn't really pass the ball downfield too often. And it just so happens that Texas had two super talented deep threat players. Xavier Worthy was the other one, who was the mainstay for Texas. But Adonai Mitchell was just as good in terms of a big playability, a guy who can get down the field. And I understand from the Jaguars fan perspective what they want to do, and it makes complete sense. And it's why I went with Brian Thomas for my first mock, is that they want to get a guy who can come in and be the best friend for Trevor Lawrence. And I understand that they have Christian Kirk. They went out and signed Gabe Davis. They have Zay Jones. But guess what? They don't have very many players beyond the next couple of years. You know, obviously Gabe Davis will still be here. Christian Kirk's contract is coming up soon. Zay Jones is on the final year of his deal. The Jaguars just lost Calvin Ridley. So I completely understand why the fans would want a number one wide receiver. I really do think that Adonai Mitchell has the talent in order to do it. Now, the questions become, you know, will he remain focused? Will he, you know, be able to produce at the level that you want him to? And that's the risk that you're sort of taking, at least as far as what all the scouts and all the little tidbits online say.
Alrighty. Well, you know, when they came into the draft last year, the Jaguars had 9 picks, and they turned them into 13 picks because Trent Baalke likes to wheel and deal a little bit. He traded down a couple of times before finally taking Anton Harrison. So in your opinion, what are the odds the Jags, who have 8 total picks going in, you think they'll move up or down? Is there somebody up higher that they're looking at and saying, like, this is that piece where we got to make our move? Or do you think they'll move down because they have several options and they're okay taking somebody further down if they can get an extra third or fourth round pick out of it?
Yeah, it's actually interesting. Just since the combine and afterward, you sort of heard a not a rumor necessarily, but you heard signs of the Jaguars being invested in that wide receiver position. So that means, you know, they're going out and they're taking on a Malik Nabers at his pro day. You know, they're interviewing guys like that. Those are players that are not necessarily going to be there for when the Jaguars pick. So, yeah, you know, obviously you think about it and you sort of connect the dots and you think maybe they're vying for a potential trade up option. You know, potentially they could trade up to number eight and say Malik Nabers out of LSU is there, or say Roma Dunze out of Washington is there. You know, if those are the guys that they covet heavily and they feel like they need to go ahead and give Trevor Lawrence an option, I could totally see them moving up. Now I will say though, Trent Baalke talked last week at his pre-draft luncheon and said, you know, trading up is something that all the analytics guys say not to do. You know, they don't want you to go ahead and invest your second round pick, basically is what it would require, into your first round pick. You know, you're going to give up assets in order to get a bigger fish, basically. And so, you know, at that point, it feels more wishy-washy in terms of if they'll trade up. It feels like a situation that'll have to be ideal, not only in terms of the player that's going to be there, but also the value. You know, will they have to give up that second round pick? Will they get anything back for moving up and giving up that second round pick? You know, those are things that they have to ask themselves once the pick is on the board. The other trade-up option I feel like makes more sense, and Justin Lewis did a great job of breaking this down on Jacksonville.com if you guys want to go ahead and check it out. You know, Trent Baalke left some breadcrumbs, or at least we think so. And it feels as though a smaller trade up to around that 12 or 13 range would make sense, because that's a position where you're getting in front of the Colts, you're getting to around where the Raiders pick, you're getting, you know, a little bit after the Falcons, you know, teams that need cornerback help. And if one of the corners are gone, I could totally see the Jaguars going ahead and moving up over a division rival in the Colts and sort of getting that second guy that they covet, that second cornerback that they covet. So those are a couple of options that I can see. In terms of trade down, obviously Trent Baalke loves his draft pick. So, yeah, of course, a trade down option is still there. And the way I see it playing out is if it does play out in this way, where four quarterbacks go, a couple offensive linemen, you know, three or four wide receivers, a few corners. And if that's the case, and that means those pass rushers, you know, a Dallas Turner out of Alabama, a Jared Verse out of FSU, those guys will potentially fall to 17. And if that's the case, I could see another team calling the Jaguars, trying to get a trade up while the Jaguars sit there and say, we're pretty good at edge. We don't necessarily need that third guy to become and make a immediate impact right away, because he's not going to see the field as much. And perhaps they want to trade down and get value and then still get their guy, whoever else they covet at that, you know, lower pick. So yeah, there's a few options for the Jaguars, and I wouldn't rule anything out at this point.
Nope. And as we mentioned, you know, to start, eight picks, so they have that 17 we've been talking about. After that, they have number 48 in the second round, 96 in the third round, 114 and 116 in the fourth round, 153 in the fifth round, 212 in the sixth round, and 236 in the seventh round. So a busy weekend to be sure for the Jags, their brass, and of course us who are covering it in the media. So with all of those picks there, Demetrius, what are the other, I mean, it sounds like we've kind of talked about the holes to fill, but as you move down in the draft, obviously you're looking for different things. So where do you think they're going to go with some of their later picks?
Yeah, it obviously depends on what they do at 17, but say they get a corner at 17, I could absolutely see them going wide receiver in the second round. You know, there's a couple of guys that make sense. A Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, for example. You know, he's a guy that I know a lot of people project to play in the slot, but he can move around the line of scrimmage. I don't think that he's necessarily some guy that you want to peg in one position. He has some solid size. I think he's about 6'1", 180, something like that. You know, he could stand to gain maybe a couple pounds, but other than that, it seems like he's a very explosive player. I didn't get to cover him necessarily when I was covering Florida, but I did get to see the aftermath, because I still kept up with the school, and I feel like he's a guy that has all the traits in terms of route running ability, catch radius, things like that, that you look for a threat in the passing game. So yeah, I can see that going in the second round. And then when you get down to the third and the fourth and the fifth and the sixth and the seventh rounds, I just think that hitting on positions of needs, you know, defensive tackle, you know, cornerback again, potentially, offensive line, defensive end, these are all positions that the Jaguars need to address in terms of their depth. And I feel like, you know, with eight picks and with those, you know, first four picks coming in, or first five, I believe, picks coming in the first 116, I do feel like they have enough ammo to get this done. And I feel like this is probably the most important draft of Trent Baalke's tenure here with the Jaguars.
All right. Well, you know, the defense, they took the brunt of the blame last year, given the turnover, the guys they let walk. Heck, they got rid of their defensive coordinator and Mike Caldwell, as I mentioned in the intro. But given all the injuries that the defense had and how mundane the offense was, do you think it was justified for the D to take the fall the way it did?
Yeah, you know, those are questions that I asked myself too, right after it happened when Mike Caldwell and the rest of his staff was fired. I mean, ultimately when you think back, and Doug sort of mentioned this, or Doug Peterson has sort of mentioned this before too, he had to take a little bit more on than he, wanted to. And now he never necessarily said what that more was, but you can sort of read the tea leaves. You know, he fires his defensive coaching staff and then says that. I mean, it most likely he was more on the defensive side of the football more often than he would have liked. So, to me, if you're having to micromanage and you're having to sort of see what the defensive coaching staff can bring out rather than, you know, knowing what they could bring out, I think that that was an issue. I think that the direction the defense was headed near the end of the season understandably drew concern. I mean, they were giving up so many yards, I believe 146 yards on the ground per game down the stretch there. And so, you know, when you have a lot of confusion in the secondary, a lot of confusion throughout the entire season, and you know, just different things that are unnecessary and sort of outside of football that occurred, then I think that it makes sense. You know, you go ahead and you let them go, and you bring in guys that you know could come in, fill that position, and not have to be micromanaged at all. So yeah, I think that that's the direction that he went. More experience, especially on the assistant coaching part of the defensive staff. And so I feel like that's sort of why Doug Peterson went that direction. And I tend to agree.
All right. Makes sense to me. You've sold me. Well, you know, we do talk about some of that offensive inconsistency. And, you know, one of those areas was behind Travis Etienne at running back. You know, last year they drafted Tank Bigsby. The year before they drafted Snoop Connor. Do you think they're going to take another running back? I mean, this draft class, if you look at the running backs that are listed, you know, generally Trey Benson is the first one, and he's projected late first, early second. And then there's some pretty decent backs out there that might be around second, third round. Do you think they could surprise people yet again and take another running back?
I believe that that would probably be the last option that they take, and only because they already drafted Tank Bigsby in the third round last year. They have to see what they have in him. You can't give up on him after 1 year. I understand that he had a very, you know, meh season, if you want to describe it that way. It was a situation where there were a lot of unfortunate things that occurred to him. You know, in the first game, you know, the ball bounces off his hands and goes into the hands of somebody else, or maybe that was later in the season, but I remember the first game, the defensive tackle DeForest Buckner just swats the ball out of his hand. He didn't really realize that the play was still live. There's just a couple of factors that went in, and you sort of circled Tank Bigsby for the reason why that occurred. And so, you know, I can understand the angst about it, but when you look at it, they have Travis Etienne, they have Tank Bigsby, they brought back D'Ernest Johnson earlier this offseason. I really would be shocked to see them draft a running back outside of maybe round seven. And actually, speaking of that, in my first mock draft that I put out, I did have them taking a running back in round seven, Frank Gore Jr. It's a little bit pandering because of the situation that occurred with the Jets and Frank Gore getting the first down, giving the Jaguars Trevor Lawrence essentially in 2021 or in 2020. But aside from that, I really do feel like the Jaguars feel like they're solid at running back. Does that mean that they're not going to bring anybody in? Of course not. But at the same time, I can't see them investing one of their eight picks in one just because of how important this draft is.
Yeah, certainly. Well, you know, again, that just the offense, you expected it to do better even before Trevor Lawrence got hurt, which was mostly the second half of the season when they had a winning record early on. They weren't exactly lighting the world up. So maybe they'll draft a quarterback. No, I'm kidding. They're not going to do that.
That's why they brought in Mac Jones.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe they can get one on a rookie contract before they have to sign Trevor for a large island, you know, out in Hawaii, or, you know, $500 million, whatever you can get for that. But no, seriously, though, you know, that the offense, a lot of the blame also went to Press Taylor, the offensive coordinator. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk around, will Doug take back more play calling abilities? Trevor Lawrence said recently he's expecting it to be Press. You know, how is that whole situation going? What are you hearing?
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't heard necessarily anything in terms of the play calling being taken from Press. You know, I talked to him at the combine for a short time off the record, and it didn't seem like anything was changing. And so, you know, I do think that that's sort of a situation where Doug doesn't have to tip his hand. He doesn't have to tell everybody who's calling the plays. He doesn't have to make it a story before he needs to. And I feel like, you know, we could be entering a situation where we don't necessarily know who's going to be calling the plays until week one of the regular season, just like last year. We didn't know that Press Taylor would be calling the plays until I believe I was in the press box for that game in Indy when that story dropped. So, you know, it's a situation where I feel like a little bit of it is overblown in the sense of play calling to me doesn't necessarily negatively impact your offense that much. I mean, it would take some disastrous play calling for you to not be able to muster at least an ounce of offense out there. And I feel like the Jaguars had plenty of opportunities with the plays that they were given to do that. There were a lot of drops. There were a lot of errant passes. There were a lot of misplays, misroutes, you know, injuries down the stretch. There were so many factors that went into the reasons why they weren't good that, to me, play calling would feel like something that's lower tier. Now, on the flip side, I do understand the situation. You know, Doug Peterson is a Super Bowl winning head coach. The reason why he was so coveted by the Jaguars and potentially by other teams, I know he had an interview with the Saints at that time too, was because of his play calling and his ability to draw up offenses and get their quarterback in the best positions to succeed. You know, you saw it with Nick Foles, start with Carson Wentz before he went down having an MVP season. So I do understand why you would want Doug Peterson to call the plays, but from his perspective, at least from what he said last year, not calling the plays allows him to be a little bit more involved in other operations on game day and other operations during the week, potentially. So, you know, it's a situation where I feel like Doug has to weigh whether or not he does want to still invest his time into the other aspects of the offense, or if he just wants to go full go again and just take over play calling, have the questions completely, you know, subsided. And at that point, I guess he can't get Press Taylor his sort of flowers, in a sense, because that's the direction that it was headed in.
Yeah, well, they've got to figure it out, and they have to figure it out quickly, because obviously with their struggles last year and the emergence of C.J. Stroud and the Texans, they were a flash in the pan as the darling of the AFC South, because the Texans have taken that away from them quickly. And they're going to be favored this year, of course. How big a gulf are you seeing growing between the Jaguars and Texans? Not just because of Stroud. You had the rookie Will Anderson, who was taken number 3 overall. He had a good season. Tank Dell looks like he's just a superstar in the making. And you're bringing in Stephon Diggs. So is there a growing gulf, or are the Jaguars staying pretty close with the Texans?
I would say it's pretty close still. It looks different because you see what year CJ Stroud had, but in my experience and watching football over the years, second year slumps are to be expected, and, you know, returning to about the mean for what you would expect out of a young quarterback sort of is expected too. Now, that doesn't mean that CJ Stroud is going to be a bad player this year. Just not necessarily, in my opinion, potentially not the player that we saw last year. He's not going to have the nearly 5,000 yard season, you know, throwing it all over the place. Teams will have an entire offseason now to sort of figure out that offense, figure out what's wrong with it, because you saw even against the Jaguars late in the season, that offense can be conquered. It's not an unbeatable offense. It's not an unbeatable team. It's definitely a team on the rise. I can totally see them winning the AFC South again. But I don't think that the gulf between the Texans and the Jaguars and the Colts are that drastic. If anything, the Texans definitely took over, but at the same time, the Jaguars could easily win the division again. I could see it. It makes sense. They split with the Texans last year, and it wasn't like they split with the Texans early. It was, you know, one game early that they lost and then one game late that they won for the Jaguars. So, you know, I feel like the gulf is not huge, but it definitely can grow, and it definitely depends on what the Jaguars do this offseason with the draft and in how they sort of implement their offense moving forward.
Yeah, well, I'll warn the Texans fans of this too, because one of the reasons the Jaguars, after winning the South, had a little harder time last year was because their schedule got tougher. When you win a division, you get a couple of tougher opponents. That's going to happen for the Texans this year. I'm looking here, their opponents at their home stadium are the Ravens, Bills, Dolphins, Bears, Lions, Colts, Jaguars, and Titans. So obviously the Ravens and Bills and even the Dolphins really and the Lions stick out there. Now, they're going to go away to Dallas, tough place to play. The Packers, you know, they had a strong year. Vikings, we'll see. Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl. Jets, Aaron Rodgers coming back. So, you know, when you look overall, their schedule is probably going to be a little bit tougher. So we'll just have to see, you know, what's going to happen as far as can they have that strong showing. And, you know, talking about the Jaguars schedule, they get the Packers and the Jets at home this year. And then Demetrius, you've got some cool road trips. You're going to go to Chicago and Las Vegas, among other places. But there's one that really does catch my eye, and I'll tell you why. It's that at Detroit game. And it's because not because the Lions were in the Super Bowl last year, the Jaguars have never played on Thanksgiving. Could this be the year that that happens?
Absolutely, it could be the year that this happens, and I feel like the league would want it to be, because the Jaguars, I believe, are the only team that's never played in on Thanksgiving. Maybe there's one other, but
nope, they're the only one.
Yeah, so they're the only one. So it just makes sense. It lines up perfectly. You have at Detroit. You don't want to put that game in Jacksonville on Thanksgiving. So I'm sure that lines up with what they like. And so, yeah, it makes sense. The Jaguars playing on Thanksgiving, I could totally see it. They're a team that it's not like the Jaguars were just an abomination last year. They were 8-3. If they had won that game against the Bengals, I believe they would have been in first place, if not already. And then obviously the next week would have been, or the next couple weeks would have been to secure first place, basically, because they would have played the Ravens. So they were right in it, in the thick of it down the stretch there. And so I do feel like the NFL still views the Jaguars favorably. I feel like they're going to be higher on their list of teams that could possibly play the Lions on Thanksgiving, since the Lions are going to always play on Thanksgiving, as with the Cowboys. So yeah, I can totally see them being that team. And honestly, at this point, I expect it.
All right. Well, let's see if hopefully Gene's not listening to this, but we won't send Gene Fournette to Las Vegas. I'll go with you to that one. How's that?
Yeah, that'd be good. I thought you were about to say something about Thanksgiving and it was going to take a different turn, but yeah, we'll make sure that you go to Vegas with me.
No, yeah, sorry, I've got roulette tables on the mind, but sorry, Gene, we'll let you still go there, buddy. All right, well, you know, the draft again, it's Thursday, it's Saturday, it's Sunday. We've got all sorts of picks for the Jaguars. Tell us what type of coverage we can expect. I manage and oversee the property, but you're going to be the one that's working like crazy, along with Justin Lewis, along with Gene Fournette, along with Gary Smits, and along with Clayton Freeman. So tell us what to expect there, Demetrius.
Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be a lot of Jaguars draft coverage, and that starts today. Honestly, there's plenty of scenario stories, best case scenario, how they ace the draft, some depth chart stuff, you know, the best available picks for the Jaguars on day one, another mock coming Thursday morning, as we talked about earlier in the podcast. We have, you know, every Jaguars draft pick that would be selected, we'll have an instant story on them. And then we're going to have a follow-up on what about them, you know, what's there to know. And so, you know, all of that through draft coverage. And then we're going to have post-draft coverage, you know, grading past drafts, you know, taking a look at a projection of the 53-man roster, a undrafted free agency tracker. We have so much content coming on Jacksonville.com. You're going to be overloaded, basically.
Well, that's how we like it. They're going to have to bring an IV into you, Demetrius, just to keep you up and running all night, because it's going to be a lot of work. But I know we're going to do a great job. You know, Gene will be sending out his grades because he loves to grade people. Sometimes I call him and he just tells me B+ for answering the phone. No, I'm kidding again, Gene. We love you. But so again, you can stick with all of Demetrius's work. That's at Jacksonville.com, or you can be one of his 25,000 followers on X/Twitter. And that's at Demetrius82. Demetrius, it's always a pleasure. Anything else you want to get in front of the audience before you go?
No, I think we're good. You know, looking forward to covering the draft again. I think that this is going to be an interesting season for the Jaguars, and this is the most important draft of the Doug Peterson, Trent Baalke era. So buckle up.
And that will do it for another episode of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. I'm Tim Walters, and to quote Jaguars owner Shad Khan, There are 320 million American dreams. Go get yours. What a great sentiment. He truly is the American dream story. Thanks for listening, and join me again next time.